Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stage Right, the show that looks at the lack of conservative voices in theater and asks, why? With your host, Rocky Benisher.
I don't know. I think I'm getting tired of that opening, and I think I want something more peppy. When I first found it, I thought it was very peppy. Now I'm not sure. It's 2015, and it may not be peppy enough. Hey, everybody. It's Rocky Benisher, and welcome once again to Stage Right, the weekly show that asks the question, where are the conservative voices in theater? We're a center-right country, so I've heard. Well, how come it's not reflected in our culture, particularly our theater and other arts? If you want to call in to us, we're at 347-884-9659, 347-884-9659. And if you want to write to me via email, I'm at stagerightaudio1, that's stagerightaudio1 at gmail.com. Hey, I'm skipping all the preliminaries this afternoon. Well, you might be listening to me in, you know, Hawaii or something, and I wish I were with you. I'm skipping all the preliminaries and all the ads that I do, the one ad for Xander Business Group. We'll get them again, but I've got a very special guest, and I'm delighted to have a guest on the program. You know, we have been talking for a number of weeks now about the Republican Theater Festival, which was initiated in 2012 in Philadelphia. It was put together by Kara Bluen. I've been in touch with Kara. I'm going to get her on this show. I've been writing to her till I'm blue in the face. Anyway, yes. Well, anyway, that's the kind of humor you're going to hear today, folks. She's going to get on, and we're trying to work out a time. But my very special guest today is Mr. Walt Vail. And Mr. Vail is going to tell you about himself, but I will tell you that he was one of the selected playwrights, one of the elite selected playwrights, of the Republican Theater Festival of 2012, and his play Downsizing, The Undercoat Man. We're going to talk about that, but we are delighted to welcome Mr. Vail, Walt Vail, to Stage Right. Welcome, Walt.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
Well, we appreciate it. Hey, Walt, tell us a little bit about yourself. One thing I know about you from reading your bio is that you are not 25 years old.
That's true. You want to know how old?
Well, you can tell us what you are, but I will tell you, I find you someone to look up to. You just keep going and going and going. I think that's great. Tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I just turned 87 and celebrated my 88th Christmas because I was only 13 days old when I celebrated my first one.
Wonderful.
And I've continued writing plays ever since the 50s, really. I got an MA in theater in 1957. At Penn State, and after that I came to Philadelphia and joined some groups. I was an actor at Society Hill Playhouse, which I still have connections with, and at Hedgerow Theater, and both of those are, Society Hill's in Philly, and Hedgerow's just outside of it, and I had studied acting and playwriting when I took my master's. So I've been playwriting ever since and sending plays out, winning some contests, getting a little production here and there, just enough to reinforce me to keep going.
Right. Well, good for you. And don't be so shy. Listen to this, folks. Waltz, I'm reading this from a page I printed out about you, Walt, so there might even be more accolades to add. But your plays include Hattie's Dress, which was produced by the Philadelphia Festival Theater for New Plays, Angelak, produced in New York by the Open Eye New Stagings, Hero Worship, produced in New York by Love Creek Productions, and in Virginia by the Alexandria Theater, Young Frederick Douglass, produced by Beverly Hills Theater Guild and Columbia Entertainment Company, presented in New York by the Juneteenth Festival Theater, Neighbors, produced by the Mark Twain Theater in Hartford, Connecticut, Branch, produced by Society Hill Playhouse, and Peepers, Jeepers, Creepers, where'd you get those peepers? Anyway, Peepers, produced by Vagabond Acting Troupe. That is quite a resume and very, very impressive. I am an playwright. I would love to have half of what you've got. So good for you, and we're delighted that you're on the theater scene.
Well, you probably have a lot. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, what? No. This is crazy delay.
Oh, you have a lot more time to keep writing and producing there.
Well, I may. You never know. You never know.
That's true.
The fact of the matter is, I may have a lot of time, but I'm 52, and what have I been doing? So I need to get going here. I need to get going. Anyway, Well, let me ask you, how did you find out about the Republican Theater Festival?
I'm pretty sure that I saw emails in the Philadelphia area that Kara sent out. And when I saw Republican Theater Festival or Conservative Theater Festival, I thought that Downsizing would be a good play for them because it's based on an experience I had. And it's sort of anti-labor in a way. Not that conservatives are so anti-labor, but I just thought it might be the one that they would pick, and they did. Apparently they liked it very much. The experience that I had was buying my first new car. I changed jobs, and I now had a salary when I could afford to buy a new car, and I bought nothing but used cars in the past. Took the car home after making the down payment, and I looked in the trunk, and here the trunk, the metal in the trunk was all rusted, and somebody had stuck an undercoating spray into the trunk and sprayed it around once, so there was this one big splash of under. And this was way back in the 60s, I think. And so I took it back to the dealer, and the dealer said, "Oh, they're all like that," and wouldn't do anything about it. So I got myself some anti-rust paint and painted over the rust myself and tried to make it last. And I remembered that that when I was young, people used to say about American cars, they used to say they got a timer on them because you would keep it 3 years and trade it in on a new one because it was liable to fall apart during the fourth year. And that was a saying. I heard many, many people say that. So, of course, then when the Japanese... Yeah.
What's interesting, Walt, is what I always heard was back in the day, the cars were built to last. You could drive them into a house and the house would crumble, but the car wouldn't. So you're saying that you heard different?
Yes. Well, I would say that there were cars built like that, like Chevys. They were known to be pretty strong cars. But they weren't all built like that. And this, of course, is just what people said around me that I remember as a kid. I don't know if it was really a fact, but I do know that when I bought my first car, the undercoat was all screwed up, so I invented a play about a person who becomes CEO of an auto company, and once he gets there, he looks up who was on the line doing undercoating the day he bought his new car, and he interviews that person, and it turns out that this laborer, a union man, believes in timed obsolescence, planned obsolescence. Not that the company believed in it, but he believed in it because if they lasted too long, he might be out of a job.
Right.
So that was my premise anyway.
Right, and the play.
Yeah, well, I think that the theater festival sort of liked the idea that it was sort of pro-business, I guess.
Right. So the combination of pro-business and, although, if I recall, and I've read the play a few times, and folks, it's a dynamic two-person drama there. It's probably runs, what, about 15 minutes at the most?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And by the way, Paul, I keep calling you Paul. Walt, were they looking for a certain length of play at the Republican Theater Festival? Did they say 10 minutes or a limit or anything like that?
I think they're just short plays. They were looking for short plays, I believe.
Okay.
Not sure about that, but I don't remember exactly.
Well, we'll ask Kara, but I was just wondering, because the two plays that I have looked at so far, yours and one by C.J. Ehrlich, which we were looking at last week, are pretty short plays. So I was wondering if that was a requirement. But at any rate, what this play is we've got two folks, right? We've got Sam, who is the big shot at the Fad Motor Company, and we've got Horace, who is the union guy. And it's all about Horace coming in and thinking that he's about to be downsized, and then Sam revealing that, hey, he bought this car, and he opened the trunk, and there was all this rust, and it turns out that that was kind of intentional. Did I capture that?
That's right. That's exactly right. And that was actually one of four downsizing plays that I had written. The idea of downsizing was in the air at that point, and I wrote four separate situations where somebody had to get downsized.
Okay. So that explains why your title is Downsizing : The Undercoat Man, which means that there's also going to be a Downsizing : Something Else. What were the titles of those plays?
Well, there was Downsizing the Sales Force. That was about a sales manager who has to fire his own dad.
Wow.
They're supposed to be comedies, and then there was one called the janitor, the secretary, and the CEO, which is about a janitor who's about to lose his job, but he's saved by a vengeful secretary who hates the CEO.
We all need one of those. Yeah,
yeah. And the another play was it was about a family whose the husband gets downsized. So the family, while the CEO is on vacation, moves into the CEO's house and claims to be his family. And they won't give up the idea. They insist he's the father.
That sounds a little Tartuffian.
I was having fun with downsizing.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad somebody was having fun with downsizing.
You're right. I wasn't the victim of it.
Right. So, if I got it straight, you said that this play was already written and you sent it in to the festival for consideration, or did you write it for the festival?
No, it had already been written and was ready to be sent in somewhere. I keep sending my plays to various theaters that seem like they might be interested in them. I try to match the play with the theater.
Well, that's a great thing that you had this at your disposal, ready to go. And did you attend the performances?
Yes, I did, and that was unfortunate because I took my lady friend with me, and she got ill right at the beginning of the performance of my play, and said. She said, please take me to Jefferson Hospital, which is in Philadelphia. And so I had to get up and go out with her in the middle of my play. And I'm afraid everybody was a little upset. But I called them back and I apologized profusely and told them that, you know, she got ill and I ended up sitting in the hospital all night waiting for her to be taken care of.
Oh, my.
So I actually didn't see it, but they said it was done very well, and and everybody liked it. So,
I'm sure. Well, first of all, you know, that's a situation that can't be helped. You know, and
right.
I think it would be you had to get it to the hospital. Was it more than one night? Didn't they do it a few nights?
I think they did separate plays on different nights, as I recall.
Oh.
It was a festival.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense. Which is why I didn't think of it.
Kara can clear that up.
Yeah. Okay. So, you felt that this play was conservative. Now, Kara posted it as the Republican Theater Festival. And one of the questions I want to ask her, but I'll ask you as well, if you have a thought on, are we also automatically to think conservative when we hear Republican?
Well, that's a good question. I consider myself conservative in many ways, but not politically. I'm very influenced as a writer by the history of playwriting, by the Greeks and the Italians, the early Italians, and Shakespeare and so forth. So, I really respect the history of playwriting and feel like I've got a lot of people standing on my shoulders, or I'm standing on their shoulders, or something like that.
Right.
So that's the conservative. And my college, Penn State, is a conservative sort of institution, but not Republican. The only Republican I ever voted for was Eisenhower because he was such a great man. And, of course, I'd been in World War II briefly. Also, I knew his brother. He was the president of Penn State while I was there.
Is that right?
I met Milton Eisenhower,
I did not know that. Okay, you were a Roosevelt man.
Yes, I was, and especially a Truman man. And the main reason really is because I was very poor as a child. And I was not on a college track in high school. I was being aimed at factory work. And so I got a job in a factory, and I hated it. So I decided I would go to college like some of my friends. And when I got to college, I spent one semester and I met all the GIs coming back from the war. And they said, go into service, get the GI Bill. And Truman provided me with a free education.
Right. No, I get it. I get it. I understand. Go ahead. Oh, sorry.
Hello.
Do you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah. Okay. Good. We're on the internet here. You never know when we're gonna bleep out. So I apologize if anything technical happens here. I think that the whole idea of conservative and or Republican has changed over the last half century. Would you consider yourself a fairly strict constitutional man, that the Constitution is it and it should not be played around with or ignored?
I certainly would not ignore the Constitution, no way. I'm not sure whether it... I mean, it's not the same time as when the Constitution was written, that's true. But it certainly is our founding document, and I would hesitate to mess around with it.
No, and I am totally with you. I think there's a group of people out there who feel that the Constitution is what they call a living document. And to your point, or what you had alluded to a second ago, is that it is not the Constitution doesn't speak to what we go through today, the conditions of life in America, in the 21st century America. And for me, I'm a pretty strict constitutional man, and I do think that we got to stick to it as pretty much as written. So that makes me in that way on the side of some conservative thinkers. But I'm interested in the whole idea of getting this kind of a conservative mindset or a conservative ideas on stage. Do you think that my premise, and you feel free to tell me if you think I'm nuts, do you think my premise is right, that we are a more or less a center-right country, but our arts world, our theater world, is very much to the left?
Well, I think that's correct. You know, there are many people in theater, of course, they consider themselves basically iconoclasts, people who want to change things and do something different every time. And that's partly how you attract an audience, really, by doing something that's suddenly startling or different. So I don't know how they are personally, you know, in terms of being conservative, but or Republican. But
right,
I think I understand why they seem to be such liberals, and I understand Kara's idea that she would like to have some Republican ideas represented in the theater. I think that sometimes there have been, you know, if you go all the way back in history, we've gone through ups and downs constantly.
Right.
Does that make
right.
sense?
Yeah, absolutely makes sense. Do you think that we've had in history and what you've seen over the course of your life that we've been at times more conservative? And if so, has it been reflected in our theater, do you think?
Well, certainly if we go back to pre-Mamet days. Now, I don't know if you know David Mamet, but he's the man that introduced the four-letter word into theater dialogue. Now,
right.
before Mamet, it was unheard of. You didn't say that word or words similar to it in a play. And so it was more conservative, I think, conservative.
With the exception of George Bernard Shaw, who in Pygmalion had "not bloody likely" as a line, and that caused an uproar, because you weren't supposed to say bloody either. And Shaw
right.
was a socialist. So, I do appreciate what you're saying in that we artists, if you will, we're iconoclasts to some extent.
Yes.
But couldn't you be a conservative iconoclast?
Well, I certainly hope so, especially today. Young
right.
people today are now talk about socialism. They're like group people. They're very socially involved because they're being taught in colleges that groups write plays. It's a collective matter. It used to be that, you know, the individual playwright writes the play, brings it to the theater group, and of course, yes, it is cooperative to put a play on the stage. It takes a lot of specialists.
Right. But
the playwright, and also the playwright was the only one who could own the script because of the copyright laws. You can only copyright the print, you know.
Right.
And these days, everybody wants to get into the copyright. The directors want to be part of the copyright because they wrote the stage directions, they think. And that stuff is going on. You know, what happens now is they want a beginning playwright who doesn't know much, and then everybody in the group, the director, the producer, the technician, the actors, everybody wants to have a say about the script. They all want to change the script. And
right.
I can't agree with that at all. I mean, I think it would be conservative to let the playwright do his job.
Well, I think, you know, I think that's a terrific point. I have been through a lot of schooling. I do have a PhD in English.
Mm-hmm.
Drama was my specialty. And
okay.
you find these professors who really also professors take ownership of these things, so much so that they believe they have the ultimate interpretation of these works of literature. And I believe in authorial intent and authorial ownership. So right. I think I'm with you on that. So I mean, I'm fascinated by this because that's a very that is a very conservative thing. And also earlier you had mentioned that you've got all these, you're standing on a lot of shoulders, the great
right.
Shakespeare's, etc. So you are interested in preserving the classics, if you will, in keeping them alive and keeping people knowledgeable of them. That's a very conservative point of view, is to keep the past holy, if you will.
I think we should definitely keep the past, which all the good things of the past, of course. There were mistakes in the past, but being an iconoclast means taking another step in a way. So, you know, building on what's been done, not suddenly saying, you know, you're all alone out here and you have to right. reinvent the world.
Right. Yeah. Well, I really think what you're espousing here, and I hope this doesn't insult you, but I really think what you're espousing here is a conservative worldview, at least as it comes to the theater. Let's not destroy what came in the past because it is the past and therefore not relevant to us. Let's instead honor it and build upon it. So I think in that respect you have a very conservative point of view.
Well, I would certainly agree with that. Yes, I think so too.
Well,
so if we want to come up with
No, I was going to say, every once in a while I come up with something that people agree with. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, if we need to get some new insight. I mean, I'm a great reader of science. I've been reading a guy named Wilson who's really fascinating, who believes that our genes not only come from our individual ancestors, but also from our social ancestors, so that we always have a conflict between our individualism and our desire to be in a group. And we always have a little prejudice towards our own group. Built into the genes.
Right.
It's a fascinating point. So, you know, I'm really interested in what science can discover, and I like to keep trying to put that into my plays.
Well, I think that's great because I just recently read an article that talked about how science fiction is the new home of conservative fiction. So I think that's great. So we can reconcile then the past and the traditions, et cetera, and bring science into it, can't we?
Yes, I really think we can. Yes, absolutely.
That's fabulous. Well, I've got about a minute left here. So I want to, first of all, thank you. We are going to ultimately expand this show to an hour. And when I do, we'll have people on for longer. And we'd love to have you back to talk about the things you're doing. But I have to tell you, folks, when's the next play of Walt Vail's? When can we see one? Where is it playing right now?
Well, my next play is the first 3 weeks in March in Beverly, Massachusetts. It's a play called La Douza, Actor and Woman, and it's about the life of Eleonora Douza, an Italian actress who mm-hmm. was never educated in a school, but learned from the plays that she did. And her early plays were romantic plays, and eventually she got into Ibsen and Chekhov, who were much more realistic, and her life became more realistic as a result of that. It's a fascinating subject.
Fabulous. And who's putting this play on in Beverly, Massachusetts?
The play is called the theater is called the Sea Change Theater in Beverly, Mass., and they're a very professional outfit, yeah.
Well,
I'm looking forward
fabulous.
To it.
That is great. I'm going to tell all my listeners to get out to this, was it the Sea Change Theater, did you say?
Sea Change Theater. You can look them up on the web, on their website.
Everybody who listens to this show, I want you out there in Beverly, Massachusetts in March and supporting Walt Vail. Well, we thank you so much for coming on Stage Right. We hope to have you on again. Keep in touch, and I'll be in touch, and we want to hear more great things from you and appreciate all your insights because they're very valuable, and we thank you.
Thanks a lot, Rocky.
All right, folks, so this is Rocky Benisher here, and we are about to end yet another fabulous, if I do say so myself, performance of Stage Right. Ladies and gentlemen, join us next week for more insights, and right now we are exiting Stage Right.